May it please the court, my name is Doyle Baker. I'm a deputy district attorney from Colorado Springs. My bar registration number is 22277, and I represent the people in this appeal. On the defendant's December 10th, 2007 trial date, the prosecutor, who was prepared to take this case to trial, knew several things for certain. He knew, number one, that there was no way this case was going to be tried that day. He knew that at the time, speedy trial was not going to run for another month. He had until January 11th. And he also knew that if there was no way the case could be tried before January 11th, that the speedy trial deadline would be extended by 6 months because the need for a continuance on December 10th was attributable to the defendant, whose attorney on that date was double booked. Now, the trial judge was determined that this case was going to be tried before January 11th and rescheduled it with 1 week's notice. The judge did so even though the victim needed several weeks' notice, and this was explained to the judge on the December 10th date. Several weeks' notice to the victim's employer to be prepared to come back to trial. The judge then invited the prosecutor to move for a continuance. And what the prosecutor didn't realize was that the judge was going to be out of the courthouse from December 12th until the morning of December 17th, when the trial was to take place. So when the prosecution came back on December 10th, or 17th rather, the result was the victim was absent for the first time in three scheduled trial settings. The prosecution was not ready to proceed. The case was dismissed. This case didn't have to end this way, and in fact, it should not have ended this way, Your Honors. This victim was a material witness to the prosecution. This victim had been cooperative, driving from Eastern El Paso County on two separate court dates, trying to meet the obligation that she had, or he had rather, on November 13th and December 10th. The victim had a legitimate reason for being absent on the 17th. He had employment obligations, and certainly that was explained to the judge. And there were other options available to this judge in this instance. This case did not have to necessarily be tried on December 17th. The defendant in this case was not in custody. If you look at Judge Hall's ruling on the morning of the 17th, he noted that the defendant was released from his bond. So this was not a situation where he was languishing in jail while we were waiting to have this trial taken care of.
Mr. Baker, the case law, as I read it, seems to require the prosecution to substantiate how it exercised reasonable diligence in procuring the witnesses. And apart from the discussion about the victim, I haven't heard any discussion about any of the other witnesses at all. And as to the victim, I haven't heard any discussion except that the prosecutor contacted the victim and was informed that he would have trouble attending because of his employment. But what can't the prosecutor subpoena the victim even if the victim doesn't wish to attend, even if the victim has employment problems? Don't you have to show that an effort was made to do that?
You do, Your Honor, and there is case law that says that if you subpoena a witness and you personally subpoena them, that that meets the due diligence test. I would argue that it does not follow necessarily from that that the failure to subpoena a witness does not meet due diligence. It depends on the particular circumstances that are present. And when you look at the cases, for example, the DJP case, which is cited in our brief, that was a situation where everybody was ready to go. There was a subpoena issued for the witness, and the prosecution told the court, or had no objection when the case was reset. Here, It's pretty clear that, what must have happened was the prosecution went to this witness and told him, you're not going to be going to trial today. Based on the comments that the prosecutor shared with the judge, it's clear that the victim was upset, said, you know, this is, I can't keep coming in from Ellicott for trial dates that don't go. There was a discussion as to, I'm sure, when the victim could be available again, because when the judge suggested the December 17th date, the prosecutor right away said, that's going to be a problem for our victim. Under these particular circumstances, although the subpoena was not continued, I think that what is clear is the prosecutor anticipated that the judge was going to allow more time for a new trial date and the victim could be reserved. When the prosecutor explained to the judge that there was a problem with the 17th, the judge's response was, well, if you have trouble, or if you have a problem, rather, serving a subpoena, or you have trouble, file a motion for a continuance. So we have a situation where the judge is inviting the prosecution to ask for more time. And then, once the prosecutor does that, what he doesn't realize is that that motion's not going to be ruled upon until the 17th.
Pardon me for interrupting you, Mr. Baker, if I may, please.
Yes.
Isn't the genesis of the problem here on the 10th of December when the prosecutor does not have his witnesses come in to have the subpoenas continued? Because at that time, assuming for purposes of argument, the victim said, hey, this is my second time out here. This is inconvenient. I can't make it in a week. There would be a clear statement of that on the record, and the judge could have dealt with it then. Instead, didn't the prosecutor here make a decision to cut his witnesses or her witnesses loose, and thus none of that happened on the 10th?
Well, the prosecutor did make the decision to cut the witnesses loose. I don't think the prosecutor would have done that if he'd known how the judge was going to act in this case.
But isn't that a risk that you take when you cut your witnesses loose?
Well, it is a risk, certainly, although you have to, you know, and we understand that judges have discretion in this, in these matters of setting cases on certain dates and certain times. But at the same time, the judge is expected to act reasonably and not arbitrarily. And the prosecution explained to the judge, this is a problem for our victim. The judge asked the prosecutor to file a motion if it were indeed a problem, which the prosecutor did, and he explained further in that motion that the victim was a key witness, and he explained that because of employment obligations, the victim could not turn around and return to court on such short notice. No one disputed any of this. The judge didn't suggest to the prosecutor that she didn't believe this. The defense attorney didn't suggest that this, in fact, was not true. In fact, the defense attorney's response on December 10th was simply to say, well, you know, if you get a subpoena out for this victim, the employment problem goes away because then she's compelled to reappear. And in that this situation, Your Honor, that doesn't solve the problem. Sure, the victim is under subpoena at that point, but he still has the problem of his employment. And if he doesn't show up on the 17th, I guess the option would be for the judge to ask us if we want an arrest warrant for the victim, which I think under the circumstances where we have a victim who's repeatedly come in and has indicated a willingness to continue to do so, if we can work with his schedule, we would not do. So in hindsight, releasing the victim was probably not the best idea. However, I think that the prosecutor was anticipating that we had a month left. The judge in November had granted a month continuance, and it was reasonable certainly for the prosecutor to expect that if a new date was going to be required, that the judge would ask for input from him about what would be a date that would be available. And there was some discussion about that, and there was a suggestion that on January 7th this case could be tried. And ultimately, the judge said, no, we need to go on the 17th, knowing that there was a problem with the victim, knowing that the victim was a material witness. And under those circumstances, Your Honor, although the prosecutor would have been better served to keep this victim there, I think that the circumstances are such that it was demonstrated to the court, or at least to the court's satisfaction, that this victim had a competing interest. The court never questioned that, but the court simply made a decision, for whatever reason, that we needed to go on the 17th, even though there were other options available. There was good cause for a continuance beyond December 17th. Defendant wasn't in custody, although he was on bond. And then when you look at the result that happened here, this case was dismissed. That wasn't necessary under the circumstances when the victim had a legitimate reason for needing a continuance beyond December 17th. We believe that in these circumstances, it was unreasonable for the judge to dismiss this case, that a less severe remedy could have been employed, and that a continuance beyond the 17th would have been appropriate. And for those reasons, Your Honors, we would ask that you reverse the judge's order, and that you remand this case with instructions for the charges to be reinstated for trial. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Natalie Hollaby, registration number 39138, and I represent the appellee, Dominic Cochran. The district court properly exercised its discretion in denying the prosecution's request for continuance after the prosecution prematurely released the witnesses from their subpoenas and made no subsequent effort to subpoena them for the new date of trial. Colorado Supreme Court has said that where a request for a continuance is grounded on the absence of a witness, it is not an abuse of discretion to deny the continuance if the party seeking the continuance failed to use due diligence to procure the presence of that witness. Furthermore, a court should grant a continuance only upon a showing of good cause. Here, the prosecutor failed to establish both that he exercised due diligence and that there was good cause for the continuance. I want to just clarify some of the things that Mr. Baker was talking about in his argument, and go through exactly what the prosecutor told the court and what the court knew and didn't know. On December 10th, the prosecutor admitted that he prematurely released the witnesses from their subpoenas. This somehow happened before this case was even called on the docket. We don't really know what the prosecutor discussed with the witnesses or what was told to those witnesses at the time. All we know is that the prosecutor told the court that the witnesses had been dismissed, and the court still told the prosecutor, my inclination is to try this case next week. And she then said she would only entertain a motion to continue if the prosecutor, and I will read this, if you have problems getting people under subpoena, then she would entertain a motion to continue. This wasn't just if you have problems with your scheduling conflicts, if they have to go to work. This was if you actually cannot get them under subpoena, then maybe we can talk about whether there is a need to continue this case. Also, the defense attorney made very clear that same day that either she or somebody else from her office would be prepared to proceed to trial on December 17th. But so the prosecutor really had no reason to believe that this case would not go to trial on that date. So what happened next, 3 days later, on December 13th, the prosecution files this motion alleging that one of the witnesses is unavailable for trial. And we don't know this from the motion, we just know from the December 17th hearing that apparently there had been a phone conversation in which the victim had said he had to go to work and couldn't come. We don't know anything about who the other witnesses are that couldn't be there. We don't know why they couldn't be there. We have no information whatsoever about any of these other witnesses. So consequently, on the day of trial, December 17th, the prosecutor is unable to proceed because the witnesses were not present. Now, Mr. Baker argued that it was not unreasonable for the prosecutor to expect that the court would grant its motion to continue. And I would argue the opposite. I don't think that the prosecutor could have anticipated that the court would grant the continuance. It can't rely on that. It can't expect a grant of continuance. We have a trial date set. It seems to me like the prosecutor was treating this as just sort of like a holding date, but not the actual date of trial. But it was, and it needed to be treated as such because everyone else was there and ready to proceed on that day. Now, in terms of good cause, the prosecution's only argument here is really that the witnesses couldn't leave work to appear in court. And the Colorado Supreme Court has recognized that some degree of inconvenience is obviously experienced by all witnesses subpoenaed for judicial proceedings, but inconvenience by itself does not constitute good cause for the continuance of a scheduled hearing, and certainly not for the continuance of a trial. So this was not a legitimate reason, and courts in the state have said as much. Now, with respect to due diligence...
Ms. Hollaby, it would depend on the record. For example, if the record was, and I understand it wasn't here, the record was, my boss has told me I'll be fired if I leave on that day because of pressing items at work, that could be a different issue, couldn't it?
I still don't think so.
That's more than inconvenience.
But we have to look at what are the other factors here? And the Colorado Supreme Court in Crow has said that the courts need to have a speedy resolution and efficient management of its docket, and a defendant's right to speedy trial both trump a victim's scheduling problems. Those two considerations have been considered as more significant, more important than simply a work schedule. And if you think about, for example, something like jury service, where you're called to jury service, whether or not your employer wants you to go, you have to go. It's the same with the subpoena. That should be enough to alleviate any problems you would have with your employer simply by being able to show this subpoena. There may be other situations where there is good cause, but that certainly wasn't the case here. And again, it's not really clear what this work scheduling situation problem was. All we know is from what the prosecutor said, he had just said, let me find this in the record. He just says, the victim, he had already come to court two different days. There was no way he could then have a couple days to inform his employer. There's no way he could give them time to come to court. We really don't know the extent of what is really going on here. We certainly don't have enough specificity about this situation to know that this was a legitimate purpose to show good cause for the continuance. And then I just would like to say, with respect to due diligence, the prosecution never stated that it even attempted to serve these subpoenas on the witnesses. All we know is that the prosecutor emailed the district court to note this one witness's unavailability and filed the motion to continue. But doing these things does not amount to due diligence. There was simply no effort to even get these people under subpoena again. And of course, the prosecutor could have done that in a number of ways. You know, had the investigator come in and say, I've been chasing these people all week and I just can't serve them. But that's just not what happened here. So I would just also finally like to note that, again, as stated in my brief, I think the state's argument about whether the speedy trial period was extended is really just kind of distracting from the real issue in this case, which is whether the prosecution established good cause for the continuance, because the ruling here really had nothing to do with the speedy trial period. It's just not the issue, and it's irrelevant to determining whether the prosecutor met its burden. And then finally, I would just like to say that the court properly exercised its discretion in denying the prosecutor's request for continuance, because the prosecutor failed to show good cause for the continuance or that it exercised due diligence. And the court's discretion here was exercised for the legitimate purpose of ensuring the efficient management of its heavy docket. And accordingly, I would ask this court to affirm the trial court's decision in this case. If there are no further questions, I will just take a seat. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your Honors, in looking at why prosecutor acted as he did in this case, I would urge you to look at the transcript from December 10th. I'm looking specifically at page 6 of that transcript. And I'm looking at lines 10 through 13. Actually, we could go from 7 to 13. The judge admonished the prosecutor for releasing his witnesses before the judge got through the docket. Then she said, but if you have problems getting people under subpoena again for next week or trouble, I'll entertain a motion to continue. And we can do January 7th as long as the case with Mr. Bednarski is not going. And before the judge made that statement, there was some discussion about a case that Mr. Bednarski had, and the people advised the judge that they were going to be getting a continuance in that case that would be unopposed by Mr. Bednarski. So basically what we're left with is the court telling the prosecutor, the 7th looks like a viable option if you encounter troubles getting your witnesses back here.
Well, isn't that, as opposing counsel said, sort of an if you have trouble getting them under subpoena, I will entertain this motion? And if that's true, why is the prosecutor not required to say, whoops, I better make some effort to get them under subpoena?
Well, what the judge said was, if you have a problem getting people under subpoena again for next week or trouble, you know, perhaps the prosecutor should have asked for clarification for what the judge meant. But it looks like with that disjunctive or in there, the judge is referring to something other than the subpoena issue. And it's our position that the prosecutor could, in good faith, look at that and say, well, the judge is inviting me to file a motion for reasons related to the subpoena or another problem. And in this case, the other problem was the victim's conflict with work.
Well, there's no promise there, is there, Mr. Baker? I mean, you're saying that the judge is inviting them to the prosecutor to file the motion. There's no promise that the motion will be granted. It simply says, I'll entertain a motion. It doesn't say, I'll grant your motion, a motion to continue.
Well, there was one condition put on what the judge said. She said, we can do January 7th as long as the other case is not going to go. And what the prosecution had told the judge immediately before that was, that other case on January 7th is not going to go because we've asked for a continuance of that case and the defendant in that case is not going to object. So the judge had basically said, okay, fine. If you're going to get your continuance on the 7th, we can go on the 7th. Then the motion is filed. Nothing happens. The prosecutor comes back on the 17th and the case is dismissed.
Counsel, it's certainly no question, though, that the prosecutor had a duty to exercise due diligence have his witnesses available for trial. And wasn't it, therefore, anybody trying to exercise due diligence, wouldn't they go ahead and try to get subpoenas served rather than simply make a phone call, send off an email, and hope for the best?
Well, Your Honor, I think that but for the trial judge's comments in this case, yes, that would be the situation. But again, I come back to the judge saying, we can go on January 7th if you'll file a motion and that other case isn't going to go.
And if you have trouble getting your people under, I think she said, if you have problems getting your people under subpoena or trouble getting your people under subpoena. It was a vague statement, so relying on that, I think, may have been a problem for the prosecutor.
It was a vague statement. Perhaps it should have been clarified, but I think that what you can take away from what the judge said was that, on the whole, if January 7th was available, we would do the trial on that date. Thank you for your time.
Thank you both for your arguments today. The case will stand submitted. We'll get you a written opinion in due course. That concludes our docket.